RCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Aldinger. With no congressional deal on border security, the White House is looking into executive action to strengthen asylum restrictions. President Biden's brother James told lawmakers at a closed-door deposition before the House Oversight Committee the president has never been involved in his or his family's business dealings. Over 150,000 Americans will get emails from the president with some news about their student loan debt.
I'm happy to have been able to forgive these loans because when we realize and relieve Americans of their student debt, they're free to chase their dreams.
Those who qualify are enrolled in the president's new student loan repayment plan. Florida health officials say there are now 6 confirmed cases of measles at an elementary school in Broward County. Police in Mesquite, Texas say a student who brought a handgun to a school meant to harm others. Officers fired at him 19 times, leaving him with a minor leg wound. This is ABC News. A leading manufacturer of ghost guns has agreed to stop selling its untraceable, unassembled firearms to Maryland residents. It's part of a settlement between the city of Baltimore and Nevada-based Polymer 80 over the number of ghost guns in the city and in the hands of minors. Just in time for baseball season, Apple is launching a new app.
Opening day is just over a month away, and iPhone owners will soon have a new way to track balls, strikes, even betting odds. The new Apple Sports app compiles stats from across the NBA, the NHL, the Premier League, and Major League Soccer, the latter of which Apple owns the exclusive streaming rights to. Apple says other leagues will become available before their upcoming seasons, including the MLB and NFL. The app is free on iPhones. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
King Charles says he's been reduced to tears over all the well wishes he's received since announcing his cancer diagnosis, and he's happy his situation has boosted support for cancer charities. Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
When Cynthia came to TurboTax, she just launched her new side gig, a true crime podcast.
I'm a first-rate detective with a golden voice.
As her TurboTax expert, I made her second income count by guaranteeing 100% accurate filing and her maximum refund.
What did she do with that refund? Find out next week.
Switch to Intuit TurboTax and make your moves count. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. Experts only available with TurboTax Live.
After my wife died, I felt like I lost everything, including my love of fishing. But one day, my granddaughter called, and I realized I still had a lot to look forward to. I got referred to a psychiatrist who explained depression can happen to anyone. Getting help doesn't make me weak. It makes me stronger. I just wish it made me better at fishing.
Mental health care is working for Diego. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, didn't cut again.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Aho, hey, Kargi. Welcome to all of our friends and relatives in Four Directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We discuss local and national Native news and events here on Native Roots Radio. This portion of the show is supported by Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon, supporting honest Native news, stories, and events from Natives themselves. Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Today we have an awesome lineup of guests for you, but I want to quickly introduce or let our guest host introduce themselves.
That's me. I'm taking over the show today. Robert is on a plane, and I always love to be able the opportunity to come on and share what I'm doing, but some of the work that I get to do is with my friends. So I'm Heather Keeler, state representative for District 4A in Moorhead. But I'm so much more than that. I'm a spud mom. I do a lot in the community, public speaker. I just actually signed up to do door dashing. And so I'm a woman of many traits, really. But When I got the opportunity to bring some guests on, I thought, what else than some of my classmates? A lot of us are going into our third re-election, and it's kind of crazy to think that. Me and Cedric were just talking about like how young our kids were when we ran first and how that plays a role in it. So my first guest is actually my seatmate on the House floor, which means we get into a lot of trouble together, good trouble. But we have Cedric Frazier joining us today. Hey, Ced.
Hey, hey, Heather, how you doing? Glad to be here. I represent District 43A, which is in the Northwest Burbs, cities of New Hope and Crystal. And it's crazy that we're going into election cycle for a third term. It seems like we just came in yesterday, and I'm sure a lot of that had to do with the fact that we came in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
But yeah, the times are crazy, man. And the time sure has flown by, but had a lot of fun with you, Heather.
I know. Well, I was thinking, so like, you know, this show, we really reach out and talk a lot about what we're doing with Indigenous, you know, communities and stuff. And one of the very first times we even did anything together was before we were sworn in. Remember, we went up and we showed up with Winona LaDuke to try to stop Line 3. Tell me, like, as you reflect on that, what was that moment like for you, and kind of how did that launch the way that you show up? Because you're a huge ally in the work that we do, you know, supporting our tribal nations and tribal communities.
Yeah, well, you know, I always think a big part of the work that we do is about showing up for those that we represent, showing up for those that we advocate for when they need us in those moments, to show that they're not alone, and to amplify the situations or the struggles that they're going through, to try to put resources there or just get them the support that they need. You know, one thing I remember about that was, one, it was cold.
It was cold.
I remember when we were there causing good trouble, and we were pushing back on some of the private hired security that they had, that I think was from Texas, that was trying to get us to leave the spot, and thinking, and I think they actually called state authorities on us, and I thought, yeah, we might get arrested today.
Yeah.
But there was no fear. You know, it was about, we were in the right place at the right moment, doing what we should be doing. I mean, the reason we were running was for that specific reason, to ensure that we were going to be able to help people. And that's what I take away from that day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now you sit, talk about the committees that you sit on and how just some of those experiences really shape the conversations that you're able to have and lead, and some of the, maybe even amendments, you know, that you've put into some of your bills with that community in mind.
Well, I sit on the Public Safety Committee. I sit on the Education Policy Committee. I sit on the Judiciary Committee, and I sit on the Economic Development Committee. And obviously all of those things, when we think about the issues that we face in our state in terms of disparities that particularly impact our Indigenous communities and our Black and Brown communities, most of our work, large part, most of our work is trying to figure out ways to disrupt and to reverse those type of disparities that we have in our state. And I think from a public safety perspective, I'm always trying to ensure that we focus on the way that whatever our policies are doing, that they maintain the sovereignty of our tribes, and also provide access to the resources that we're putting in those spaces. And I know you and I often ask you, or Chair Becker Finn, you know, in terms of trying to really make sure I have a good pulse and a good understanding of what's needed. And I know I often reach out and say, hey, here's some policies that I'm thinking about. I need to talk to a tribal leader to see how this may impact them, or if there's something that I'm not paying attention to that would impact the way the tribes are going about their business. And of course, you all have always been able to help me make those connections and to make sure that we're creating policy that's going to be very helpful, you know, for everyone in the state of Minnesota, but particularly for our sovereign tribes here.
Mm-hmm. I think it is one thing we've done a better job at is those relationship building, you know, like deep, honest, truthful relationship building with our tribal leaders and our urban Indian communities too. You know, 60% of our native population doesn't live on a reservation. They live in communities like ours. And so I think that that's been really important. It's fun to have like a Native American caucus, that there's enough of us that like, it's not just one of us always answering the questions, but I think it's created an ability for us to really have this strong allyship in the way that we maneuver. Okay. So I want to shift us a little bit. You know, we both have young kids in this work, and I think you're leaving because you got roped into being a dad and a coach somewhere, but you know, I think that the one thing about our class is that we're just kind of these real life parents living and breathing that parent experience in our communities. So talk a little bit about what that's been like. You know, your daughter was sitting on your lap. She was little in your first video. Yeah. You know, now they're almost 4 years older. So how are you balancing that?
How am I trying to balance that? I'm trying very hard. I'll say that.
Yeah.
It is a constant, something I have to pay constant attention to and focus on and be intentional about it. But like you said, tonight, I'm helping to coach a basketball team for my 9-year-old. Had not planned that, but, you know, people's schedules come into play and some folks couldn't, weren't able to fulfill that commitment. So myself and my wife are stepping in to help do that. And we're happy to do it because our daughter's dead. We wanted to have a good experience along with the other kids. But just in terms of, you know, because we are engaged as parents and we're younger, youngish parents, relatively yeah. speaking, when we're making policy, I mean, we're still going to PTA meetings. We're still going to parent teacher conferences. We're still getting those emails from school districts. So it's top of mind for us. And we understand what parents are going through and what student needs are. And I think it's very beneficial in terms of being able to be in tune with and have your kind of finger on the pulse of what folks actually need to make their lives better and to provide the best they can for their kids and to give our students the best opportunity possible in our educational systems.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I feel like it's always crazy when we sit in these meetings or conversations. I would say particularly at like our education policy table, both you and I sit at that table mm-hmm. together. And there's a lot of times that people will say things and we just know like you're not in tune with the current day education system, right? When it's like, oh, well, when my kid went to school 20 years ago, this is how it was. Well, that's not how it is anymore, you know? And so like one of the things that I take a lot of pride in out of the Education Policy Committee was the fact that we did an entire article around Indian Education for mm-hmm. All. And right. making sure that, you know, kids can wear their eagle feathers when they graduate, that we can have traditional tobacco in schools because it's not commercial tobacco. I mean, there's spiritual understanding with that. But what are some of the biggest takeaways that you had, you know, just in your first, well, 3 years going into fourth year and kind of how do you plan to relaunch your reelection campaign?
I mean, I think it's just that, and I know we're coming up on time here. It is the idea and the fact that we have the ability to bring these lived experiences into the room, right? And we're talking about making policy in real time to really address the needs of the people in Minnesota, and particularly our young people in Minnesota. And that's kind of what I'm going to take away from this, and can let that continue to be the energy that pushes me into the next election cycle. Is that we did a lot of work this past session. We're not going to go over all that. You can ask our other colleagues about it. But what I know is there's still a lot of work to be done.
Right. So give us the website that people can check you out on your reelection campaign if they want to donate, volunteer, or anything like that.
Okay. Well, website CedricFrazier.org. Check me out at Cedric Frazier. All my social media pieces. Check me out. Follow me. Support. Ask me any questions. I will be responsive.
Awesome. Thanks, Ed.
All right, everybody. Good to see you.
We got to take a quick break, but you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake. Stay with us.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by, stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
As we pack away the ornaments and bid farewell to the holiday season, it's time to unwrap the gift that keeps on giving, getting protected by a COVID-19 vaccination. This is your chance to make a difference, especially as our Native communities face higher COVID numbers. Those higher numbers underscore the need for collective action. So answer the call and get vaccinated. The latest vaccines are not just authorized, but they're proven effective against the current variants. This is extra protection, even if you've already had previous vaccines, since previous vaccines will eventually wear off. Plus, the new shots are FDA approved for ages 6 months and up. A COVID vaccine is not just a shot. It's a pledge to safeguard the wisdom and stories handed down by our elders. So join the movement, get vaccinated, and make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community. For more information, including details about clinics offering free vaccines, visit vaccines.gov.
Life can be hard. Sometimes it feels like there's no answers, like there's no way out. Hennepin County's COPE Mobile Crisis Response is here to listen and help you find a way through whatever is going on in your life. Call 612-596-1223 for no-cost crisis support anytime, anywhere in Hennepin County. That number is 612-596-1223.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic, or NAC, in Minneapolis.
Yay, and we're back. I'm taking over. Robert's not here. He's on a plane. Representative Heather Keeler taking over the show tonight with my friends. So now I'm switching over to Representative Emma Greenman. We just finished up with Cedric. Hi, Emma.
Hi there. I have to follow Cedric.
You do. Yeah. And you're setting it up for Athena. So that's how great this entire show is.
Teamwork,
right?
Makes the dream work.
It really does. So Emma, tell us a little bit about what district you serve. Kind of maybe tell us a little bit about the committees that you sit on.
Yeah, and thank you. I'm really excited to be here. I'm really glad you organized this, and I count myself lucky to be one of your friends that you, when you take over radio, you invite me to be on. So I am Emma Greenman. I represent 63B, which is South Minneapolis, sort of the south side of Minneapolis. It's the area I grew up in, everywhere from Minnehaha Falls all the way Lake Nokomis, Lake Hiawatha. It's a great area. I actually spent all day with our junior high kids at Justice Page. And so it's wonderful. I will rep my great district. I am a voting rights lawyer. And so in the legislature, I do a lot. I'm the vice chair of the elections committee. I am on the labor committee, which is a place that's really important to me, workers' rights. I'm on the veterans committee, and I actually have the Minneapolis Veterans Home and the Veterans Hospital in my district. And then I am on education finance, because working with Representative Keeler, with Heather, on education policy and education finance is such an important part of our caucus and what we do. And so it's my first year on education finance, but I'm glad to be there.
Yeah. So one of the things that I always think about when I think of you is like democracy, right? And I mean, you can't think about Emma Greenman and not think about democracy. And as an Indigenous person, you know, I grew up in a world where we were told, you know, that our tribal IDs didn't count and we couldn't vote. And, you know, it's interesting how much I learned that those were all lies. You know, those were all things that were really like voter discouraging tactics. And so I think before we really move on, are there some things that you want to share with our communities just that are important for them to know? You know, we're all going into our reelection in November of 2024, but I do think that there's just healthy reminders for us to know, like, you do have voting rights. And what are some of those, just so that you know and are aware of them?
Yeah, and I have appreciated, even before we were elected, I think you invited me up to, I think we did a Zoom in Moorhead on voter engagement. And so much of this is about ensuring that folks, that we create an inclusive environment where folks know the laws, know their rights, know their eligibility, and also feel comfortable and welcomed into the process. Because so much of it is about actually people feeling like when I show up to vote, or when I need to get registered for the first time, when it's the first time I participate, that I feel comfortable, I feel I can stand in my power. And there are people around me, they're both not just elected officials, but election workers and community around me that that support me. And so I really appreciate the work you do in Moorhead and around the state. I know that in Minnesota, when we talk about ensuring that everybody can vote, we have high voter participation, but we also know that our disparities, our generational disparities, our BIPOC disparities, our disparities with Native versus white voters is real and has an impact on our political process. And so it is all of our jobs to to build that inclusive, multiracial, multigenerational politics. And I followed Cedric, but Cedric and I and our other colleague, Liz Bolden, started this Inclusive Democracy Caucus in the legislature in order to do that, to say, I'm a voting rights lawyer, so I talk about this all the time, but my goal is to turn everybody into champions in their own community to ensure that we're doing that. So folks should know, and we changed a bunch of laws this year that should make voter registration a bridge, not a barrier to registration. So if you're 16 or 17, you can pre-register to vote. Kids in our high schools, and if you have 16 or 17 year olds, if you're a teacher with 16 and 17 year olds, or if you are a 16 or 17 year olds, getting pre-registered to vote. So then when you turn 18, you'll automatically be registered to vote. We also have now rolling out automatic registration. So if you get your ID card, your driver's license, and soon we'll be expanding that. The government already has that information that they need to know your citizen, your where you live, and how old you are, making registration and then you brought up IDs, and, mm-hmm. and there's a cook, and we can probably pot in the chat on the Secretary of State's website. But we have made it really inclusive about what you can bring and use in order to be able to, for the first time you're registering, to show you say where you live, you say you are. We do not have a voter ID for folks. What we're talking about is if you want a same-day register. There's a set of ways that you can prove your residency and your identity, but that's just to where to start.
Yeah. So you can use your tribal ID to vote in Minnesota. That is not something that anybody should be telling you. Make sure that you do know and understand that. So you talked a little bit about joining the education finance world. You know, I come from education as an Indian education liaison, and Sed and I just talked about some of the policy stuff, but you know, we implemented a lot, especially around the Indian Education for All curriculum. We put money into those programs. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what allyship means when it comes to creating a more, you know, inclusive, Indigenous infused education system border to border in Minnesota.
Yeah, this is where my democracy framework hits all the other work I do. You know, the way that we should be creating policy is hand in hand with Minnesotans, with the folks in our district, the folks who are impacted, with the folks who have been left out of the process. And so the best way to know and understand and think about what we should be doing is not just to ask, but just to do it together. Right, to set priorities together. We know we are a big, broad, diverse state. And one of our jobs, one of the hardest parts of our job, and that Heather and I and Sed and Athena all represent different areas of the state, and we serve with people who represent very different areas of the state. And some of our job is really to have to be able to understand and to reach out and to center the folks who are actually not just in our districts, but who are impacted by these policies. And I think that when we talk about infusing that priority, we're also talking about the voice, right? And not just the amazing Heather Keelers of the world or the Alish Kozlowskis of the world, but also the folks who are impacted, the students, the teachers, the families, the parents, I did a lot of work with hourly school workers, and we made sure that on our campuses and in our tribal colleges, those folks were protected when we do all the other work we do. And so listening to all the folks who are impacted, which is, you know, an important part of our job and our work. And I think that's how we reach the best policy decisions. Because it's how we understand where we need to go and what we should be doing and bringing those communities together, right? One of the things I will say that I've told Heather this a lot, but I'm really, really proud of the MIFPA bill that we passed. But one of the things I'm most proud of is how we passed it and how particularly through Heather's leadership, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on with you, you've heard me say this before, but it was an opportunity to really engage our entire, all of our communities. We did some work in my own community of really understanding our history and how it systemically impacts the now. and how we need to change that. And that bill, I think, allowed us to have a conversation that that was deeper and is educational and also activating as we move forward. And so that is my long-winded way of the way that we do this is centering the people who are impacted by the policy we create.
Right. I think you bring up a good point because MIFBA, which is the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act, was the Minnesota version of the national ICWA when it was under Supreme Court jurisdiction, and we just didn't know what was going to happen. That, you know, I really took it back to my roots of just educating people about Indigenous history and why it was so important. You know, a lot of people don't know that Indigenous people are the only politically protected class of people, and that, you know, we've had generations and decades of the government trying to dissolve us as humans. And so really getting a full green board in the House in the middle of session came because we educated each other. And it was, you know, not in my representative hat, in my other world, when I do my two feathers educating, it is amazing to me how much people just didn't learn about us in the education system and how that plays out in their decision-making factors, right? And so, you know, we're educating grown adults about things that we should be learning in our K-12 systems. And so I do appreciate that you continue to help educate your community about that work because education is really a lifelong thing. So quickly before we wrap up.
I just want to say on that, after spending all day with a junior high, they have a year of Minnesota history that I didn't have when I, in the same school district. But also when I was asking seventh and eighth graders, what do you talk about? What they said was, we talk a lot about the history of Minnesota as Dakota and Ojibwe land. Yeah. And it was just like coming out, but that was not the education. I grew up in, we had a pretty liberal education, but I did not have that. And so that it is really exciting to see that actually change the next generation of education, because I think it'll change the next generation of policymaking and government and democracy.
Yeah. And it's representation, you know, like as Indigenous people, we have to see ourselves in these spaces and we have to talk honestly about it. So thank you, Emma, for joining me. I know you're headed off to another event because as you always do, you stay very busy and very active. But quickly give us your information. If somebody wants to support you in your reelection campaign, how can they find that for you?
My campaign website is Emma Greenman. Emma Greenman. .com.
Gotta get used to that.
emmagreenman.com. Or you can find me on Twitter or Facebook at Emma Greenman. And yeah, we are always looking for, you know, in a district like mine, we're also doing a lot of work to support folks like Heather and others, and also to make sure that at the top of the ticket, we have good pro-democracy, pro-worker, pro-family candidates that are going to do right by our people.
Sounds good. We got to wrap up. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks, Emma.
Thank you.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Aldinger. With no congressional deal on border security, the White House is looking into executive action to strengthen asylum restrictions. President Biden's brother James told lawmakers at a closed-door deposition before the House Oversight Committee the president has never been involved in his or his family's business dealings. Over 150,000 Americans will get emails from the president with some news about their student loan debt.
I'm happy to have been able to forgive these loans because when we realize and relieve Americans of their student debt, they're free to chase their dreams.
Those who qualify are enrolled in the president's new student loan repayment plan. Florida health officials say there are now 6 confirmed cases of measles at an elementary school in Broward County. Police in Mesquite, Texas say a student who brought a handgun to a school meant to harm others. Officers fired at him 19 times, leaving him with a minor leg wound. This is ABC News.
Is it Saturday night yet? Hey folks, Jimmy K here. Join me, Rocker, and Terry Barr for Max Inc. Saturday Night. It's your weekly look at the Wisconsin music scene.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggiehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Tony Evers is asking the state Supreme Court to reconsider the state's congressional maps. He signed new legislative maps into law on Monday. Democratic law firm Elias Law Group asked the Wisconsin Supreme Court to take up the congressional maps after the court ruled last year that the legislative maps were unconstitutional. The court will have to move fast as the state elections commission says new maps need to be in place by March 15th to take effect this November. Wisconsin State Senate Republicans are firing four more of Governor Evers' appointees, Democratic Senator Mark Spreitzer.
Governor Evers is still the governor, and he'll still be the governor next session. It's been 5 years, and I'm still waiting for all of you to get used to that.
Tuesday's firings include former Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton from the UW Hospitals and Clinics Board and Tom Ames from the Natural Resources Board. I'm Nate Wuggiehout, Civic Media News.
Earl Ingram.
My special guest is the curator and founder of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society, none other than Claiborne Benson.
I want people to know that Wisconsin has a beautiful, rich African-American history. Many people think the King celebration and all of those other kinds of things are more important. They occurred in Wisconsin as well, and we've impacted the entire nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, a partly cloudy sky with lows in the low 30s. For tomorrow, sunshine returns and warmer, highs to the upper 50s. A mix of sun and clouds on Friday. It cools back down to 40 degrees, but warming again this weekend. Low 40s Saturday, low 50s Sunday. Currently 40 degrees.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on News from the Center. 107.7 FM and 1450 AM WRCE and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is News from the Center. WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hello, everyone. It's Heather Keeler taking over the show. Robert's on a plane, and we're making this fun. But before our next guest comes on, just because my friends are busy people and they're always moving around, I kind of wanted to take a minute, and me and Haley were talking about, like, what do we want to talk about? And I think the number one thing on our mind is
Lily Gladstone. I mean, come on. We got a comment here. Nancy wants to hear about Lily Gladstone as well. I mean, and this wouldn't be Native Roots Radio if we didn't acknowledge the huge monumental win for Lily Gladstone at the Golden Globes this year. I think a lot of people watched this. I know that CBS reported the highest ratings in years at 9.4 million viewers. And I think this is because almost every Native person probably across Turtle Island was tuning in, right, Heather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's this piece. We always talk about representation and how much that matters. And she started her acceptance speech in her language, and I just always get so emotional. Like, it's not a language I necessarily have to understand or my own, but there's something that's so powerful, right? About seeing somebody like you get up in a space and speak their language so powerfully. And what I loved the most about that is that she gave a lot of credit to her mom. And she talked about, like, how her mom really pushed her school district to provide language in the schools so that they didn't lose that. And so, I don't know, I feel like I cried like the couple times that I've watched her speech, because the first time, you know, we're just so in awe that somebody who looks like us is in this space and celebrated, you know, which I think when we're not seen in spaces, I've always said it subliminally tells us that we don't belong. And I don't know, it was so powerful. Did you cry? Tell me that you cried.
Oh my gosh. I don't know a person that didn't cry. I mean, yeah. I recorded her whole speech and I was just anticipating it. I knew she was going to win. Just had that feeling, you know, as Indigenous people, you can kind of, you know, anticipate some type of news. But mm-hmm. yeah, I cried. I didn't post the speech that I recorded because you could hear me crying in the background. But yeah, I know, you know, Lily Gladstone, Blackfeet Nation is out here making her story, not history, but her story. And mm-hmm. She won Best Performance by a Female Actor in a Motion Picture Drama for The Killers of the Flower Moon this past Sunday night. And yeah, you know, in her quote, she says, "This is for every little res kid, every little urban kid, every little native kid out here mm-hmm. who has a dream." And, you know, I don't know if you noticed this too, but the film Killers of the Flower Moon itself didn't take home any of the awards they were nominated for. And neither did Martin Scorsese. So, yeah.
It was her. Right. I love the pictures that were like, here's Lily and some guy, you know what I mean? It's like, finally, yeah. you know, we're in the spotlight and we're able to share our story. But I do love that part of her speech because, you know, 60% of our population lives off the reservations. And I think there's a lot of us, you know, I identify as an urban Indian. My parents moved off the reservation before I was born in hopes to like create a better healthcare system for the state I was growing up in. And so I do really love that she used her words so powerfully to bring us all together, because often within our own population, you know, we do kind of see that divide, I guess. And so I loved it. It was extremely inspiring. And I hope that we use her words for a long time as the reminder of, you know, what we can be and how we can show up. The other thing, I don't know if you caught this. I didn't realize that, you know, they said that in the past, what they did is they would have people just say their lines forward and then reverse it and say that that was like the native language. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I feel like there could have been at least a bit more effort when trying to portray native language, because it's so different. I mean, each tribe kind of has its own language and it's very different. And language is, you know, it's hard to learn, but language is culture back. It is everything. It is healing. And just to be able to speak a little bit of your language in front of, you know, a crowd of people as powerful and important in our society as that, I mean, that was huge. And, you know, I've heard it too, you know, if you're not confident and you don't know much of your language, speak it anyways.
Right.
Because no one else is. And your ancestors are always going to be proud of you for trying. I don't know if you caught this too, Heather, but the host, Joy Coy was the host. And in his opening monologue, he said, "What I did learn from that movie was that white people stole everything. You stole the land, the oil, the entire premise of the movie." And I thought that was hilarious. I know Martin Scorsese's daughter next to him did not look too pleased, but I, on the other hand, had a pretty good laugh.
I mean, it is what it is, right? That's the truth. And we have to be able to say what it is. It's kind of like, you know, we were just talking about Indian Education for All and being honest about, you know, the history of things. And I really love that we're showing up on the big screen with our stories, you know, and our humor. And we think of reservation dogs too, right? I mean, we're starting to see shows and movies that show up with us. I follow some different groups that are actually looking for Indigenous actors and actresses. And they're very firm that you have to be from that community and speak that language, and that we're not just like finding people to play our role, that we're actually like finding us to step into those spaces. And I think it's, you know, it's just another component of really educating, you know, the entire nation, really.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. And I think too, just you saying that kind of reminds me of shortly, it wasn't too long ago, we had George McCulley on, who was an extra in Killers of the Flower Moon. And he talked about in his interview how many non-natives showed up to play native characters in this movie, Killers of the Flower Moon. And the directors and everyone just immediately took one look at him and said, nope, turn you away. And they took, you know, all of the real Native actors into a separate room. And it was quite surprising to hear that. We have a question here. Don wants to know which award Lily Gladstone won. Lily Gladstone took home Best Actor. Sorry. She's she took a performance by a female actor in a motion picture drama. So, yeah, we're just really, really proud of Lily. And I know, too, Lily was in her high school yearbook voted most likely to win an Oscar.
Really?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a picture of her in her yearbook, a young little teenager holding. Well, she wasn't holding the fake Oscar. The guy voted Best Actor was holding it. But I mean, I'm just waiting for the day that Lily does take home the Oscar. The 2024 Oscar nominations will be announced on January 23rd, which would be an even more monumental victory for Lily in Turtle Island if she took home Best Actress in a Leading Role. This is coming from Indigenous TV via Instagram, but this year's Academy Awards will take place on Sunday, March 10th, with Jimmy Kimmel expected to host. So I'll be tuning into that and hopefully a lot of people across Turtle Island as well.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful how we show up to support each other, too. Like, we don't know her. Like, I don't know her. I've never met her. But all of a sudden, I'm like the biggest fan and I'm cheering from afar. And I think that that's something that's really beautiful, too, is, you know, in this world sometimes where we kind of pull each other down and, we're really self-destructive sometimes, that it's, I think it's beautiful to watch us lift each other up and celebrate the wins and, just be in this moment really together as one nation. I think it's wonderful. And also, you know, it is a message to the next generation and the little girls and the little queer people out there, because she is Two-Spirit as well, is that like we do belong in these spaces. And, you know, when people bust through those glass ceilings, we're making space for the next generation. And so I'm just so proud. And I feel like, you know, my cousin's out there doing these really great things. My relative's out there doing these really wonderful things. So I think we need to take practice that we really lift each other up as well.
Yeah, especially as women, too. I know we've had, there's so many great Native actors that come to mind, you know, like Wes Studi and all of them, those iconic ones, and Dallas Goldtooth and, Bobby Wilson. But Lily, I mean, I don't know if I've seen this big of representation in female Indigenous spaces, especially film. And it's huge to see this representation, not only in film, but across everything, you know, just like you rep, you know, Heather Keeler in Office, and we need it everywhere. And I don't know if you have been paying attention or if you're much of a hockey fan, but we have 4 Native women that are now in the PWHL, which is huge. So representation matters everywhere. So the WPHL stands for Professional Women's Hockey League.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I do love that. I mean, we saw that, you know, in other sports too, that we kind of break through and show up in spaces. It's just, I don't know. I just love that we're being seen in spaces in a world that, you know, people literally try to eliminate us, and it shows our resiliency to come through and really show that we're current day people. We're not just pieces of history. Like, we're making history, and we're building, you know, next generation that I think can be very proud of what we've all accomplished. And continue to accomplish in these, I don't know, trying times, beautiful times, wonderful times.
Exactly. Have you seen, I don't know, so did you mention if you have or have not seen Killers of the Flower Moon yet?
No, so I've tried. I think part of it, though, is, you know, it's hard for us to watch some of these things. And I think we have to protect our own trauma. We have to protect our own mental health. And so for me, I've just not really been in a space to be able to give it the energy that I need emotionally. It's the book is wonderful. And my mom watched it and she kind of gave me the heads up that, like, for me, I'm such an empath, and the way that I work and the way that I carry things, and I carry a lot of our community's like heaviness, that I have to be prepared. Mm-hmm. I just watched Lakota Nation versus United States, which was really hard to watch, but it's on my watch list for sure.
Yeah, I know it's I chose to go see it in the theater, and I went by myself. It was like one of the first days that it came out, and I don't know, I wanted to support the story, but I did not really take into account how traumatic, you know, some of the scenes were in there. And I know we just probably have a minute left here, but I know it's going to be coming out on Apple TV. So keep an eye out for that if you haven't had the chance to see Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah. And, you know, build that support network, because it is hard. I mean, that is one thing that I've heard from our community, is that it does, you know, really talk about the trauma that has been experienced. And so just making sure that you're in a good place and you have the people around you to love you as you kind of walk through that as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Heather, I know we have one more segment coming up after this next break that we're going to go to shortly. Do you want to announce who our last guest is here?
Yeah, it's been really fun. So I'm bringing Athena Hollins on, Representative Hollins. She was also somebody else who was in my class. We all came in the pandemic. And so it's always fun to kind of watch us grow together. But she's the whip of the House. And so we'll talk about what that actually means, what her roles are, and what kind of some plans are moving forward in the next re-election that we all have.
Awesome. Well, I know I'm looking forward to it. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We're here with guest host, Representative Heather Keeler of Minnesota, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us. The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program, or TAP, is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP, along with a copy of your ID. We'll mail you a go-to card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. 612-373-3333.
All My Relations Arts presents Okizi. Okizi means to heal, and the exhibition highlights the healing power of cultural revitalization for Native communities. Okizi showcases prints, mixed media, textiles, beadwork, digital collage, and glass sculptures by Native American and Sami artists. It explores Indigenous communities' active healing efforts through language revitalization, land back movements, and embracing traditional knowledge. Visit All My Relations Arts to experience Okizi through April 13th. More information at allmyrelationsarts.org.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. How?
Oh, you made me do it. I did it with you. Yeah. Okay. This is Heather Keeler taking over. Robert's on a plane. I keep saying that. I don't even know. I mean, I physically saw him on a plane, so I know. Right. I know he's on a plane. Our next guest is running a little bit late. And so I guess I'll sort of fill in. I keep asking my guests what their reelection efforts look like and kind of what it's been like. And so I am running for re-election. I feel like this is the time of year when we kind of talk about like who's retiring, who's going to run again. But I do want to give a shout out to Jamie Beckerfin. She's the chair of Judiciary. She's in the Native Caucus with us. And she announced her retirement back in December. And not that she's watching in this moment, but I do want to give her a lot of credit. She really sat in spaces as the only Native in the House when Mary Kunish went over to the Senate. And I know that that's hard, you know, being in this work and having to be the voice for really a really unique, beautiful community it's hard to do. And I think she did a fantastic job, and I'm sad that she's leaving, but I'm so grateful for the opportunity to have to work with her. And so sort of left me no choice, right? Because like two of us can't leave at the same time. And there's a lot of like wheels that were spinning kind of in motion. So yeah, it's nuts that she's leaving, but I am running again. And so I know, right? I kind of feel like I'm half crazy, but also like it's fun to be able to do this. But some of the things that I think I'm the most like proud of is the work that we did. Like we mentioned earlier, we did Indigenous Education for All. You know, working in the schools, Haley, I saw, you know, administrators tell our kids they can't wear eagle feathers when they graduate, or, you know, just having funding to be able to support the needs that we had as students. We really are addressing mascots and making sure that, you know, we don't have mascots in the state that are harmful to our communities. And so I think it's little wins like that that make it a little bit easier to go back and continue to do the work. But the coolest thing is that we made Indigenous Peoples Day a state recognized holiday, and passed MIFBA into some pretty, I would say, solidified language so that our Native children can continue to be protected and placed with other Native families.
Yeah, yeah, all really, really great things. And the whole not being able to wear your eagle feather, or, you know, I have a really great question that I've been kind of meaning to pick your brain. I know we've talked about mental health a lot with you on the show, and you're a huge advocate for that as well as I am. What would you say for someone who's trying to advocate maybe smudging in maybe like a therapy setting for some place, you know, across the state that might not allow that in a building where healing is supposed to happen. And as a cultural person, you know, what would you, what advice would you give that person to kind of speak their voice and speak their truth?
I mean, that's an issue everywhere. I have been fighting this battle with the healthcare systems for a really long time. Starting with just, I used to work for Sanford. I used to work for Urban Indian Health. And we talked a lot that, you know, our healing from our illnesses isn't always white man medicine. You know, I mean, we burn sage. Sage kills airborne bacteria. You know, in the 1978 Act, for the Act of Native American Religious Act, says that we are legally able to practice our spirituality, which comes with our medicine. There's also exclusions in the fire code. So if you're ever being told like, well, no, we can't have fires in here, this is a really unique way to kind of get into that. Like, those are the barriers that people will tell you, but they're not real. And so we've talked also a lot about, well, what do you think smudging is? Like, do you think people just start right. these big flames and it's like billowing smoke, which most of the time in healing practices, it's not really like that. And so I think we just have to do a lot more education. I sit on the HHS conference committee, which is the Human Health and Human Services. And this is where we talk a lot about what we can do as medical practices. And I try to bring it up in that educational way that we have to be more mindful about how all of us really heal, especially with our mental health or our holistic well-being. And that includes our medicine. And if nothing else, you know, provide smudge kits or a space that we can go. You know, how many times have you ever been to a hospital and they have a chapel there for you, you know, to go to? And so I think we just have to keep pushing back on that narrative that says we can't, because we absolutely have the right to, and we just have to continue to educate. But that's also why it's important that we show up in those spaces. You know, like as therapists and as physicians and working in our medical field, so that we can continue to advocate for that. Because you're right, it's one of those things that people say, oh, I don't like the smell of it, or I don't want to do that, or my other clients will be upset about it. And it's like, so you're taking away what is best for me because you care so much about what everybody else is going to say. Doesn't necessarily help our mental health.
Exactly. Yeah. And the whole fire code is a excuse that I've heard a lot. And it's hard. And then you're like, well, am I expected to go outside, you know, in the winter to do this healing when everyone else can remain in the building? And I think too, when you're the only Native person in a space like that, it is kind of like, oh, I'm here to learn. I'm not, you know, here to educate people. But it's also like, you know, you kind of have a responsibility as the only Native person in there to, you know, not not like belittle and, but, you know, educate, you know, in a friendly way and stand up for your truth. And if not, you know, your ancestors' truth and for the next Native person to come through that building mm-hmm. or go through the program. So, yeah, just thank you for your advice on that. And I hope, you know, that helps someone else out there too, maybe going through the same thing.
It's always so hard because I feel like when you're the only Indigenous person at a table, you know, you have to do so much more than just your job. You know, I see that a lot in the legislature. Like, as a legislator, I'm there to make policy. I'm there to make sound decisions on our state budget. And often I end up educating all my colleagues and people at the table, or like it never fails, right? When there's a conversation happening about anything with our tribal nations or Indigenous community, nobody else wants to say anything, but all eyes will turn and look at me or Leash or Jamie Becker Finn to like give the Native perspective. And so, I mean, it is hard. And I know that that's daunting, and especially when you're the only one in a space that can really feel like a lot to carry. One thing I wanted to add back to that language piece, you made a really good point in the last segment. And I don't know where my next guest is. We only have like a minute left, so I guess maybe we'll bring her on another time. But we do live in a busy world being legislators, but you know, you're right. Even if you don't speak your language perfectly or know it much, we have to get into practice of at least trying. But I think that there is this barrier that even our elders or people who do speak the language fluently or better than us sort of criticize us. You know, I've experienced that a lot, like that I didn't say this right, or you should say this, or why don't you introduce yourself like this? And I think we need to have a little bit more grace and patience with each other as we learn, because some of us are products of boarding school. Some of the assimilation did work for us, and we're trying so hard to get that back. And so I think within our own communities, we need to be a little bit more kind as we help our next generations or older people that are just trying to learn the language too, to really just help us show up in the best way and not, you know, like criticize us, but more help us, because the language is hard. It's different, it's unique, it's beautiful, but I have seen that. And so I did kind of want to call that up a little bit more, but we're going to wrap up. Thank you, Haley, for joining with me and having conversation. I'm so excited that our guests were able to join. And as always, I'll be back. But, you know, in my reelection, you can find me at Heather 4 House. It's the number 4. But I'm always looking for these campaigns cost money, but they also take volunteers and just effort. And so anything anybody can do to help is always greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Big Pinagi. That was Minnesota State Rep Heather Keeler with her amazing guests. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We are still here. We are the next generation. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office, and free Leonard Peltier. Now.
Ithaca's choice for news, talk, and sports. News from the Center, WRCE, 1450 AM and 107.7 FM.
Thursday on Matinee On Air, Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us for a public service announcement. Then we talk sports with Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Radcliffe. Hope you'll join us.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinee On Air with Jane Matinee. Weekdays 10 till noon on News from the Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM WRCE, and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Check your email. Starting today, more than 150,000 people will receive emails from President Biden telling them that their student loan debts are forgiven.
While a college degree is still a ticket to a better life, that ticket is too expensive. And too many Americans are still saddled with unsustainable debt in exchange for a college degree.
The president on the campaign trail in California, those who are qualified are enrolled in the president's new student loan
repayment program. The White House is looking into taking executive action to toughen asylum restrictions. The Texas Attorney General's office is suing to close a Catholic nonprofit which helps to shelter migrants in El Paso. For the second time in 5 years, federal charges have been dropped against alleged members of the Rise Above movement, a white supremacist group which is accused of inciting violence at California political rallies. This is ABC News.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media Radio Network recognizes the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Kelvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Echoes of Empowerment, Black History Stories, will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl Ingram.
In March 1965, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. led a peaceful group marching in support of voting rights, but police attacked them as they tried to cross the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Voting was nearly impossible for black people because of unfair processes like literacy tests and poll taxes. A few months after the march protests, Congress passed the Voting Rights Act, giving everyone a chance to vote. Listen for more Black History Stories here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
It's